America and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio and Patrick Mifflin. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Chris will be joining us a little later on, in about roughly about half an hour. He's off doing errands and stuff, but he'll be back with us in a little bit. But in the meantime, this episode is for October 12th, 2018. We are now a little under 3 to 4 weeks until the midterms, folks.
Yep.
Midterms are going to be on the 6th of next month, so it is now the 12th. So it's going to be about 3 weeks and 4 days.
Yep.
And we are going to get used to that little mantra because we're going to be counting it down for the next couple shows until it comes. Yeah. Because this shit's important. You know, obviously, I mean, it's if you're a democracy can only work when you have, you know, citizens who are, involved enough that they're willing to go out and actually vote on the major issues.
Yeah.
And most midterms have technically been, most midterms tend to be like, for the longest time, they were always sort of like the non-event.
Preseason in politics.
In American politics.
Yeah.
Pretty much second string to like the presidential election. In fact, for the longest time, you know, the Daily Show had like a Schoolhouse Rock parody that pretty much the whole point of it was that midterm elections, the voters just ignore them, you know.
Not so much this year.
No, this year I am expecting record-breaking attendance this year. And not just in Georgia, but literally all over the country.
Yeah.
Because we got some serious fucking issues we're going to have to deal with this year, the administration being only part of it.
Yeah.
We'll get to all that in a little bit. But, just expect when we have our show next week, expect us to talk about it again. Other than that, this week, we got some, obviously we got some more movie news, we got some trailers that came out, a certain department store is pretty much on involuntary life support at this point, we got a Florida story, we got a story out of Hawaii, which is, it is just the weirdest goddamn thing. In an example of what happens when trying to game the internet goes wrong. you remember that fire festival that happened a while back that turned out to be a big fucking scam?
Yeah.
Well, some people are finally getting the consequences. Taylor Swift made a bunch of white nationalists have a goddamn coronary. We'll be getting to all that and more on this episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off as always, Phil. What have you been up to this week?
So I'm still going my way through Dune. I'm about 40%, I think, of the way through.
Yeah. So
it's getting there. Still enjoying it. And if there's
Are they on the planet now?
Yeah, they've been on the planet for a while, and that whole assassination attempt happened, and that's fun. Some good stuff going on there. It really is kind of Game of Thrones in space. So I kind of see where...
And beating it by a good 30 years.
Yeah. I kind of see where George R.R. Martin got a lot of his inspiration from. So, yeah, it's good stuff. I'm going to try to finish it this weekend. I haven't had a chance to read as much as I would have liked to this week. So maybe over the weekend I'll be able to get it finished up. So I've been doing that. Still been playing Shining Force on the GBA. About 3/4 of the way through that one. Still making my way through and still enjoying it. I really like how they actually added kind of a catch-up mechanic to characters now. So, like, used to be, like, in the original, if any of your characters got too far behind, it was basically...
They were fucked.
They were fucked. It was completely not worth using them anymore. But in this one, if you have a character that has a big level discrepancy, basically anything that they do will get them maximum XP. So, yeah. So, you know, they'll catch up in levels very quickly. So, yeah, that's a nice mechanic that they added. And, yeah, just makes for a game that kind of encourages you to bring back other characters that you might have been neglecting for a while. So, yeah, enjoyable. Apart from that, I've been listening to some music. That Steve Perry album dropped last week, so I listened to that. It's something. Not sure what your thoughts were on it, Brandon, but it's definitely Steve Perry. It definitely felt like a very personal type of album. Uh-huh. I just thought that there wasn't enough of it.
It was a little bit more low-key.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he kind of did this. It was more of a personal project than anything.
Yeah.
It's definitely, you know, I like it. It's definitely not bad. And it's very in line with what he usually does, but it's definitely not something that's meant to be commercial.
No.
I think.
Yeah. It's like, I really enjoyed what I listened to of it. But, like, you know, there's only 10 songs, and none of them are particularly long, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's good. I'll probably listen to it a few more times, and it'll be enjoyable, so.
Yeah.
Apart from that, well, I've been staying in touch with our friend Barry Leach, and he has been gracious enough to share his work in progress of that Rob Hubbard Spellbound cover.
Oh,
boy.
How's he doing?
He's doing really good. Yeah, it's over there in Ohio. Not not all that far from Chris, actually.
It's true.
Yeah. So, yeah. That Project Hubbard thing that's going to be releasing with that track on it is due, I think, early next year. So, yeah, looking forward to getting my hands on that. It's seven full albums. That are basically tributes to Rob Hubbard. So, can't really go too wrong there. So, and from what I've heard, just from that one track of Barry's, yeah, it's going to be good. Going to be really good. So,
cool.
And that's kind of been it for me. How about you, Pat?
I'm still glued to NHL 19, almost exclusively. I started streaming it this past week, as I said I was going to do with the franchise mode. And, well, for an expansion team, these guys are really seriously overachieving. I wasn't even trying to go for kind of a Vegas Golden Knights design, but that's the kind of success we're enjoying. So, at the moment, I've got the Utah Eagles sitting in second place in the Central Division, just 4 points behind the Nashville Predators. So, I think I'm going to have to shift my thinking in terms of front office moves to we're going to go for it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, expansion team going for the cup. I mean, it's not unheard of.
That's true. At least after last year. But other than that, the streaming itself has been a bit of a hit. I'm probably a few good streams away from a Twitch affiliation. It's just a matter of getting as many eyes on it as I possibly can now.
Yeah.
But it's three average viewers at any given time to get your affiliation, and I'm sitting at 2.6. So it's coming.
Yeah, you're not far from it.
Yep. Well, that's been my week.
All right. Well, I am on the last leg of Valkyria Chronicles 4.
Nice.
On the campaign anyway, and holy shit, goddamn, the way that this game ends is very different from the way that the story in the first Valkyria Chronicles wraps up. Because the big difference is, like, in the first Valkyria Chronicles, you know, you're essentially, you know, the first Valkyria Chronicles has, like, a central villain. You know, like, a central individual that can sort of act as the hate sink. You know, I mean, he's got like some people that work under him, but he's like the guy at the top, Prince Maximilian. He's the he is the main villain and ultimately the final boss of the game. Yeah. But there isn't really a villain. Well, okay, technically there is a villain, and there are a lot of antagonists, but he's kind of not really, like, the main... he's not really, like... He's kind of ancillary to the actual main story. Because the whole point of Valkyria Chronicles 4, the whole point of the story, you know, it's Operation Northern Cross and Operation Cygnus. It's to finally get all the way into... you know, the actual capital of the Empire to finally bring the war to an end. The game actually, like, so, the thing is, events in this game happen in real time, basically around the same time as the invasion of Gallia. So, about a third of the way into the game, you find out that Prince Maximilian has been killed and the invasion force has been routed and pushed out of the country. So, at this point...
That explains the stream I saw last night.
Yep. Why's that?
One of my friends was playing the DLC and actually recruited the party from the first game.
Yeah, that's actually not really related to the story.
Oh.
That's just extra DLC you can get. Yeah, they don't show up in the game proper at all.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're like several miles away from there anyway.
Yeah.
So basically, if you recruit them early, then you're fucking with the timeline?
Yeah. I mean, anyway, Gallia is like a podunk little country in the Federation anyway.
Yeah.
It's basically Sweden.
Yeah.
It also ends up, remember when I told you that thing about how I said that the Valkyria are basically walking human atom bombs?
Yeah.
Well, apparently the game thinks the same, too. Because guess what happens to be your secret weapon? It's a Valkyria bomb.
Okay.
And I know that sounds like I'm giving something away. Trust me, I'm not. Because there's a whole lot more to it than just that. And, yeah, so once I finish it, I'm probably just going to go full in on spoiler territory. And, if that bothers you, then, you know, we'll just put a little note and when you can go past it, because fuck, this game's got a lot to say.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get into the series.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, like half of it is all PSP.
Yeah. The whole PS3 thing that Phil talked about a few weeks ago on Day Zero Update?
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So next up, music. I discovered a little band from Finland called Battle Beast. And let me ask you this. Do you like power metal?
Yes.
Do you like Berserk?
Yes.
Do you like power metal about Berserk?
I didn't know this was even that existed.
Well, here you go. Battle Beast. It's an 80s all hell power metal band from Finland with a badass female lead singer. Like a third of their songs are about stuff from Berserk. Another third are about stuff from like various cyberpunk tropes. And another third is, another like four third is like contemporary political stuff. And then another four third is a whole cycle of songs in their own fictional world of their creation about a race of lion men fighting off an invasion of evil robots.
Okay, okay. I see nothing wrong with this.
And it's keyboard heavy. Yeah, it's good stuff. So I was like that, and I was like, okay, I cannot believe I didn't know this existed, but I'm glad it does.
Yeah.
And I get to listen to it ad infinitum on YouTube now.
Yeah.
Other than that, internet says specifically Netflix and Funimation. Guess what I discovered is on Funimation? The entire 10 series.
Entire what? You broke up there.
The entire Tenshi Muyo series.
Oh my shit.
All of it. The original OVAs, the TV series, Tenshi in Tokyo, Tenshi GXP, all of it. Every last piece of it.
absolute masterwork.
Yep.
Oh, does it include the newest one, Itenchi Muyo?
Yep.
Hell yes.
Mm-hmm. Got those two.
Oh, that series is interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's so much more modern.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much more self-aware, and they get a lot of mileage out of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tenchi Muyo, I think, was, like, along with Slayers, like, the first anime series I remember getting really involved with.
Yeah.
Mostly because I think Tenchi Muyo has... Tenchi Muyo, you know, its plot is, let's be honest, its whole plot is beyond stupid, and it kind of revels in it.
And yet it still finds ways to make it epic.
Yeah. And has, you know, characters that are likable and well-rounded enough that you really never get sick of them.
Mm. Yep. They're timeless.
And it's just kind of amazing how they've managed to sort of... how all the mileage they've managed to get out of that franchise. Because Tenchi Muyo is like, when you want to think about 90s anime, Tenchi Muyo is 90s as fuck.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, it is the most 90s of 90s anime that you can find from back then. Yeah. But it's also, somehow it all holds up. It might also be partly because, like, unlike a lot of anime dubs back then, they actually got really good voice actors.
Hmm. Yeah, that probably helps.
For the English dub, unlike, you know, a lot of other anime at that time that had really lousy dubs. But yeah, so I know what I'm going to be doing for the next couple weeks.
Yeah. I feel the same way about Ranma One Half, because that was the series that I came in with.
Oh yeah, they got Ranma One Half on there too.
Oh my god. I guess that was like a half a generation behind the Tenchis and the Slayers, but...
Well,
yeah.
I mean, Ranma was like... I think Ranma was sort of like... Okay, so if I remember correctly, Ranma first started in, like, the early 90s, right?
If not the 80s.
Well, early 90s, late 80s, because I know that Rumiko Takahashi was, you know, she had to wrap up Urusei Yatsura before doing that, and that series pretty much became a whole industry in and of itself, because it was such a massive hit that... It just had everything, like, literally the only thing you can compare it to is probably Inuyasha, which came after it.
Yeah. Although way, Inuyasha stuck the landing, too.
Yeah.
I have to give credit to that. The manga ending for Ranma could suck start a Harley.
Yeah.
It should have ended after the Jacendo arc and just let it hang.
Yeah.
That ending was atrocious, and ugh. Yeah. And that's the one thing that Inuyasha got right, was they ended it on a very well-handled note.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, they also have Inuyasha on there, too.
Nice.
So basically, like, Funimation has, like, all of
the anime. Yeah, pretty much. Hmm. Except for some that are unfortunately lacking, like, you know, El Hazard, for example.
That's a series that could stand a reboot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hasn't it been rebooted like two or three times already?
So. Well, maybe I'm just...
Could be made again to be temporary, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not one that I got super into, so it's entirely possible.
Yeah. Basically, if you want to know what El Hazard is, it's like... imagine Tenchi Muyo, but instead of everybody being aliens... everybody is like a princess from a Arabian Nights fantasy world. That's basically El Hazard.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, so that has been my part. So anybody got anything to add before we go on to the next section?
Not really.
No? All right, well then, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know, this week I thought we'd do it kind of low-key, something that isn't terribly serious because, well, we got some serious shit that we're going to be talking about a little later. And so I thought we'd, have some sugar to help the medicine go down, I guess.
Yeah.
A little honey before we have to punch you with the vinegar. All right, so I thought, you know, so I don't know about you guys, but I'm really into, like, spicy food. I like a good kick, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I like hot sauce, you know, I like spicy dishes from pretty much all over the world. And one of the great things about world cuisine is, and kind of a requirement of world cuisine is, if you really want to expand your palate, you kind of have to build up a bit of a spice tolerance. Because there are some, like, traditional cuisines out there where, like, spicy is just the standard. Some places, like, for example, the Kingdom of Bhutan, their national dish is literally chili peppers and cheese.
Okay.
Like, legit, just that's it. Chili peppers and cheese served to you in a bowl. Eat up. But, okay. I could hang out with them. Yeah. So I thought, just very quickly, I'd go over three of my personal favorite spicy dishes. But not necessarily just my personal favorite spicy dishes, but they're also, like, the spiciest dishes that you can find in, like, the world. And so let's start off with probably my favorite cuisine of them all, Chinese. I love Chinese food. You guys like Chinese food?
Yes.
Chinese food is great. And, of course, one of the things about Chinese food is that a good third of China really loves the hot stuff. You can go up to the Sichuan province where you'll get all kinds of spicy chilies and, you know, with those Sichuan peppercorns, which have kind of a citrusy but also numbing flavor. So it's not just hot but also kind of numbing at the same time.
Yeah.
Then you got, like, Huanan province, which doesn't even go for the hot numbing pretense and just straight up tries to kill you with chili pepper. Yeah. By the way, fun history lesson, Mao Zedong was from Huanan province. he would famously, sprinkle crushed chili peppers on watermelon. You know?
Huh.
Yeah. I think he said once that, you know, I don't trust any food that doesn't try to kill me. And then, of course, there's Guangdong, which not only has spicy, but will often prepare it with, like, fermented foods, like, you know, bean paste or pickles or that type of thing. But in all of China, there is one dish that is pretty much just, like, it's like the standard bearer of just, holy shit, this is going to burn my mouth spicy. And that is everybody's favorite mixture of meat and tofu and bean paste, Mapo Tofu. Which is, like I said, it's from Sichuan.
That doesn't sound Chinese. That sounds very Japanese.
Well, it originated from China. It originated in the Sichuan province. It's a combination of tofu and sometimes meat. Doesn't have to be. It can be a perfectly vegetarian dish. It's then cooked and it's set in a spicy sauce that's typically thin, oily, a bright red. That's made with a fermented broad bean paste and chilies and gochi. And we'll usually have some minced meat, some pork or beef maybe with it, and then it'll have, like, some onions, some chestnuts, some wood air fungus. And it's one of those dishes that when it made its way out of China into the rest of Asia, it sort of became the byword for, oh my God, this is so hot. Like, this is the reason why if you're into anime or manga or visual novels or that, it's pretty much like the byword. Mapo tofu is usually the byword for, oh my God, this is, you know, fire shooting out of my mouth and nostrils, that kind of hot.
Yeah.
Funny enough, it became famous because of a guy named Chen Kinmen, who his son, you may have heard of, Iron Chef Chen Kenichi.
Yes.
He famously made a very spicy version of Mapo tofu, but whenever he was on the show, he would always water it down significantly to try and help the Japanese palate. The only time he really made it super spicy was when they started doing the King of Chefs competition between the Iron Chefs. Hmm. And when he considered like this might be his last battle, he just decided to go ahead and make it as spicy as he usually did.
Hmm.
It helped, though, because one of the judges was a sumo Yokozuna from Hawaii, and he quite liked it. But on like the other side of Asia, let's talk about Indian food. Does anybody here eat Indian food?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. You know, curry.
Yes.
Samosas. Fucking naan bread. God, it is just an amazing cuisine. And when it comes to Indian cuisine, there's only one thing that you can think of. It is if you go to an Indian restaurant anywhere in the Western world, you sit down and you ask the waiter, bring me the hottest thing that's on your menu. They will inevitably bring you out this spicy meat monstrosity known simply as pho. It is literally basically just meat served in a bowl of lava. it's so hot, it's not even authentically Indian itself. It was literally invented inside of the UK by Indian restaurateurs when someone asked for something that was spicier than the vindaloo, which is like one of the spiciest things you can actually get in regular Indian cuisine. And the fall, the sauce can be anywhere from like a deep bloody ruby red to almost black because it's loaded with so much. Just let me put it this way. The Brick Lane Curry House in London they make their fall with like a dozen different chilies, including Scotch bonnets, habaneros, ghost peppers, and just recently the Butch T Scorpion.
Okay. Has anybody died yet?
No, nobody has died. Although, funny enough, there was another curry house in I think Scotland that had a curry eating competition, and it ended up sending like a dozen people to the hospital. And you think that would be like the end of their business, but they actually like cut out newspaper articles and have them at like the shop window.
Steered into it.
Yeah. But like most
have signs up in the restaurant that says, don't forget to wash your hands before going to the bathroom as well.
Oh, that's fun. Most of these curry houses, when they bring out the fall, they usually will make you sign a waiver. Like, Jesus. Legit. Because, yeah, I mean, when stuff gets this spicy, the body does weird shit.
Yeah.
Hiccups. People start seeing and hallucinating things. Hmm. You know? Usually, though, if you do manage to finish it, they'll give you, like, a free beer or something. And usually they'll serve it with, like, I don't know, like a cold carrot and cucumber mixture or, like, a yogurt drink of some kind.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's pretty much enough for Asia. So how about we go all the way over to Jamaica, the Caribbean. Now, I'll be perfectly honest with you. The first time I ever had Caribbean food was actually when I was in middle school, because one of our teachers was originally from the West Indies. And she had some family from Jamaica, and we had a cultural appreciation. I was going to say cultural appropriation. Might as well have been, but right. It was called a cultural appreciation day. And I was looking around there, you know, we had like a big buffet for lunch that day. And like all the teachers, you know, who were like from, you know, like had like different cultural histories, they brought in like an example of their cuisine from where they were from. And she, of course, like I said, her family was from all over, you know, the Caribbean, Barbados, Trinidad, Jamaica, the Bahamas, all those places. And she decided to give her idea. So I'm looking around here, and I'm looking at this big buffet, and I go over, and I'm looking, and I see what looks like the most glorious-looking baked chicken I have ever seen. Like, it was perfectly roasted. It had a nice brown crust on it. It was, like, a little oily-looking, so it had the sheen on it. And it had, like, these – it had, like, this rice and these, like, carrots and green beans around it. And I was like, wow, I need to try this. So I took a piece, you know, I took a bite, and I'm thinking, this is really good. Flavorful, it's juicy. Crust is especially good. What's this called? Jamaican jerk chicken. Gee, why do they call it jerk? It was like I had just been hit by lightning. Jerk chicken is a very traditional dish that's native to Jamaica. It's usually made by taking whole roasted chickens, cooking them on pimento wood, which this is usually the reason why it's really hard to get, like, really good jerk chicken, like really good authentic jerk chicken outside of the U.S. Well, in the U.S., outside of Jamaica, because the type of trees that they use to cook jerk chicken in Jamaica only grow in Jamaica. So basically you have to, like, get, like, slats of pimento wood if you really want to make it authentic. And then basically what they'll do is they'll put the slats on top of, like, a metal drum, and they'll put in, like, the wood and the charcoal, and then they'll marinate the chicken with stuff like allspice, maybe some Worcestershire sauce, and then basically the thing that really brings it over the top, Scotch bonnet peppers, which are they're a relative to the habanero. But they're actually just a notch spicier, which I did not think was possible. I certainly do now. So, yeah, those are the three, like, really spicy dishes you can get out of World Cuisine. I recommend all of them. Just don't try to eat them all at once, because your ass will feel like the pit of Hades come the morning.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, if you're not willing to take a few risks to enjoy good food, you're hardly living.
Yeah, and that has been everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid.
And, hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris. Yes, Chris at Slogy has now joined us. Hey, Chris.
Hello.
All right, well, you joined us at the right time, because we haven't started the
proper show proper
just yet. So you want to give us an idea of what you've been up to this week?
Yeah, so partly we've been freezing out here because the weather took a turn south. It's in the 40s right now. I think the low for tonight is 39.
Hey,
yeah, it's going to be like that for the next week or so. I think it's going to go back up a bit. But it was 80 on Wednesday and then 40s on Thursday. So that's the cold slap of winter.
Yeah.
As for stuff I've done, I finally finished the third book of the Thrawn trilogy, which goes about what I expect, because I've read books after this time frame.
Yeah.
So I knew how certain things would start lining up.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it ends pretty well. The weird thing about reading, like, the Star Wars books on Kindles, you get, like, the little percentage, like, how far along you are. And the books always end about 75% in, because they have excerpts from other books in at the end. So it's like, here's the first chapter of this book and this book, which is cool when you are up for seeing other stuff. I think one of the Thrawn trilogy books, maybe the first one, has like a weird little short story about Chewbacca and his family, where I think Han is in trouble, so he's like going to rescue Han and with his son, and some crazy shit.
Don't worry, there's nothing about Life Day in there.
No. But yeah, so that's been good. I'm not sure what I'm going to move on to next. But yeah, as for games, I mentioned on Day Zero I wanted to get Minute while it was on sale, which I did. And so far it's been really quite good. So imagine if you took a Zelda game, let's say like Link to the Past, sort of top-down. Took out all the filler, most of the combat, and just made it about going around the world and solving puzzles.
And just stripped it down to its basic essentials, basically.
Yeah. And every life lasts 1 minute, so 60 seconds. So essentially, when you start in this house, and you're like, okay, I'm going to go look around. And you see there are bushes to your left, to your north, and there's a river to your right, and you can't go through those. So it's like, okay, I'll go south. And you find a rusty sword. And now you can cut through bushes and kill enemies. There are not many enemies. There's like a couple crabs here and there, and some people. But you generally just ignore that stuff, unless you got a specific quest to do that. And so there you're probably, by that time you find that, your 60 seconds are up, you're dead, and you respawn back at your house. And it has a real nice cadence to it, because it's 60 seconds, it's not a long bit, but you just keep, like, okay, now I got this sword, I can explore a bit further, because I can break through those bushes. And you kind of keep going a little bit further and further. There's a good bit early on where you go by this lighthouse, and there's a guy who talks really slow, one character at a time, testing the limit of your 60 seconds before you can figure out what exactly he's telling you. And there's some good bits like that throughout. There's like this haunted house I go through where you just keep going down the floors, and there are some nice little things in there, but you have to go through there for a specific reason to open up another path. But yeah, it's just lots of really cool stuff. There's this bit with the hotel where you have to go find a bunch of people, because if you fill it up, you unlock the ladder to the roof. There's a swimming pool up there, which also gives you an item that lets you wade through water, which is good just for cutting through some of the... You can now go over rivers. You can go across lakes and such. You can go out in the ocean. There's a shark that'll kill you. And it's a really well done game that just sort of very focused on what it wants to do. And that's so refreshing when you play a bunch of open world games where it's like, here's all the things. You can spend 50 plus hours if you want. Like, here's a game's like, okay, it's 60 second chunks, and it's pretty steady progression as long as you know what you're doing. There were a couple times where I was kind of a little lost, but I eventually figured it out and got what I wanted. But yeah, it's a really fun game. People should definitely check it out. It's probably one of the best indie games I've played so far this year. I also played...
It's still on sale right now.
I think it ended yesterday.
Or just now.
The 11th it ended, so missed your chance.
Okay.
But actually, there's a PSN flash sale which has like ton of the recent most recent games came out, like Donut County's on sale. So if you have not gotten that yet, check it out. I think it's like $9.74, something like that. Also really great for people that bought these games at launch, because let's see, Divinity Original Sin 2 is on there. What else is on here? Dead Cells, Fighting EX Lair, Fire Pro Wrestling World, Guacamelee 2, the Mega Man X Legacy Collections that just released. Shadow of the Tomb Raider. That's $15 cheaper now than people who bought it 1 month ago. Slime Rancher, Shenmue 1 and 2 are on sale. The Crew 2, Vampyr. And Yakuza Kiwami 2. That's $40 now.
Wow.
So yeah. Some good stuff if you miss the launches of these games. Like, good chance to go back and get some stuff. I think it might actually be a good idea to get some of those games, because some of those games are in the countdown to launch promotion that they got going on, where you buy any two games that are in this group of games, and you get a $15 credit back.
Nice.
Let's see. Madden's on sale. That's part of it. Pro Evolution 2. Shadow of the Tomb Raider. I think that might be it. There's not too many. But yeah. You get those games on sale, plus get a $15 credit. But yeah, for games that are out now, Mark of the Ninja, I got that the remastered on Xbox One. Yeah. Which took Microsoft a while to get that going, because they always mess those up. So instead of playing it like in the morning, it was not available till about 7 o'clock on Wednesday, I think it was. Or Tuesday. So I did not get to play it until Wednesday. But that game is really good. It is a stealth game. And if you played Clay's other games, crap, what was the brawlers they made before Mark and the Ninja?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, those ones that had just really gorgeous animation.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's like a really simple name. I forget what it was. But yeah, so it kind of looks like that. And they do a really good job of putting information in your hands in terms of stealth. Like when you're stealthy in the dark, you know, your character turns black. So it looks like you're like a classically
Shank.
Ninja. Yeah, Shank.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Those games that looked really good didn't necessarily play that well.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mark of the Ninja, like when you're in the lights, you notice you have like a blue outfit and like red hood, that sort of thing. But when you're in the dark, when you're hidden, you got like a classically black ninja outfit. And it's stuff like that that's really well done. Like if you're outside of a room, you can sort of lean up against the door and see inside, that sort of stuff. But if you're outside, you can also see or hear the footsteps. So you'll see kind of like a little bit of sound around you. Like that sort of stuff that makes it really easy to kind of at least have an idea of what's going on around you, even if you're not specifically seeing it. And so, yeah, I've gotten about halfway through the second level. It crashed on me for some reason. yeah, that game has been a lot of fun to jump into. Because I remember getting it on PC when I got this PC built, and the controls just didn't work that well. I think it was just something weird bugging out, because I think I was using the DS4 stuff that was just causing the movement controls just not work right.
Yeah.
So I didn't really play as much of it as I would have liked, but I don't have to worry about that so much. But yeah, that's a game that people should definitely check out if you're into stealth games. But yeah, that's kind of been it. Been real busy this week.
All right.
Okay, well then, it is now time to start the show proper, and got to start, as always, with the assholes of the week. And our assholes of the week are the entire GOP, who...
2 weeks in a row.
Well, it wasn't the entire GOP. At least one or two people did not go through with this. But, yeah, Brett Kavanaugh has been confirmed. It is now a justice on the Supreme Court.
Yep.
Justice.
Yeah, and I really love that they have tried to retroactively change... Dr. Ford's story, essentially trying to say, oh, they believe it happened, but that she misremembers who did it. Which
yeah,
I saw a lot
bullshit.
I saw a lot of trauma experts are like, yeah, that's not how memory works. You go through trauma. You remember details intimately. Do not forget anything. But of course, they get to create their own reality that their base buys into.
Not much longer, because Blue Wave's coming. Crashing right into them.
Even people like Suzanne Collins, who was basically saying, yeah, this is why you should be reporting these things to the police. It's like, she was 15 when this happened. She probably didn't think anybody would believe her. Even now, people don't believe her. Because Trump, in his rallies since then, has been like, yeah, he's been proven innocent, even though it wasn't a trial. You know, she made it up. She was paid, you know, paid protesters and all that shit. He said something about the paid protesters are not getting paid anymore, so they're going to protest more. And it's like, this guy has just gone off the deep end with his Fox News as conspiracies.
Yeah, he's
because he's gotten everything he's wanted so far, for the most part, except for taking down Obamacare.
Mm. Yeah, it's still hanging in there, barely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, doesn't help that a lot of Republican legislatures in the states. In the states, like I said much earlier when we started the show, midterms coming in a little over 3 weeks, about 3 weeks and 4 days, and and various Republican-led legislators all over the state are already trying to do some underhand, dirty tactics, including things like purging the voter rolls.
Yeah, I think Georgia was one of the big states.
Yes, and guess who? Yeah, so you guys know who are like our two main contenders for governor are?
It's Mr. Immigrant Bus and Stacey Abrams.
Yep, Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp. Guess who also happens to be in charge of the voter rolls in Georgia? Brian Kemp.
Yeah, because he's what, the attorney general?
Yep.
System, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So...
guess who also gets to be in charge of counting the votes in Georgia? Brian Kemp.
You would think there'd be laws where, in the case of the person in charge of that stuff running for higher office, that would be handed off to an impartial third party.
Yeah, but we run a little too much on the honor system here in the U.S. And
when there's no honor.
Yeah, when there's no honor. But it's also places like Florida... North Dakota.
Yeah, Florida, that infamously sound state for voting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They basically, the voter registration site for the state of Florida went down 2 days before the deadline, and they never fixed it.
Yeah. The thing is that you can still vote as long as you have ID. You can fill out a probationary ballot or whatever it is.
Yeah,
that's the weird thing about the news that people aren't necessarily saying as much. Yeah.
Which is, like, again, is the reason why when it comes, we got to go in and we got to go in hard because they're going to throw up every wall they possibly can. Because here's the thing, existentially, they know they're in the shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, no quarter, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep.
But to sort of put some sugar on top of that mountain of shit, somebody, some good Samaritan out there, bought the domain name brettkavanaugh.com, and they've turned it into a site for survivors of sexual assault. That's our hero of the week.
Yep. Nice.
Yeah. It's one of the things people in the public should definitely do is have people to... by their name as a domain.
Yeah. Otherwise, you have no idea where it's going to end up.
Yeah, people like John Oliver who will buy, I think it's RudyGiuliani2024.com. It has like ferrets fucking or something like there.
Mm-hmm.
He bought a bunch of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that the URL is hosted by Fix the Court, a nonpartisan judicial reform organization whose main goal is to fight for honesty and transparency on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, they got their
cut out for them.
There's actually a twist. Even though the site launched this week, it was actually purchased 3 years ago, along with a handful of other names of potential Supreme Court nominees. Cool. Sort of like Rockstar buying a bunch of domains for sites for potential GTA games.
Yeah.
Like, which one is it? I guess they own... MerrickGarland.net and JudgeGorsuch.com. So all right. Go as RuthBaderGinsburg.com.
NotoriousRBG. All right. Well, now it's time to start the proper show proper. And start off with, well, basically the world is on fire. Yeah, so the IPCC put out a report, says that apparently the effects of climate change are happening a little faster than they thought they were, and we've got only a couple of decades to make some serious changes, or we're fucked as a species.
Yep. Yeah, so the IPCC is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually run by the UN.
Yep.
And so, yeah, they are talking about us trying to hit the 1.5 degrees Celsius increase. Saying that even if we manage to stop it there, there's still lots of bad stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it won't be completely as fucked as if we go even higher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they say we could reach that in as little as 11 years. And certainly hits 2 degrees Celsius in maybe 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't a case of, oh, we'll punt this for our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. This is your children.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
And they basically have highlighted some things that people should be doing, specifically governments. And yeah, so let's see. These solutions all require unprecedented efforts to cut fossil fuel use in half in less than 15 years and eliminate their use almost entirely in 30 years. This means
no coal. For the record, there's already countries that are aiming for that now. So
yeah, but we need everybody.
Yeah, like the U.S.
Yeah, we can't have just all the small countries and have China and the U.S. and Brazil and Russia saying, yeah, we'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
Well, China's actually, you know, they're doing a pretty good job of actually trying to get
there. They project that they'll be completely done with fossil fuels by 2025.
So. Yeah. Yeah, so this means no home, business, or industry heated by gas or oil, no vehicles powered by diesel or gasoline, all coal and gas power plants shuttered, the petrochemical industry converted wholesale to green chemistry, and heavy industry like steel and aluminum production either using carbon-free energy sources or employing technology to capture CO2 emissions and permanently store it.
Which for the record, most of that stuff already exists.
Yeah, no, it just has to become widely used.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would mean governments would have to encourage people with probably really good tax breaks to buy electric cars, or at least hybrids. Getting all the electric companies, your gas companies, all that to do all the conversions to get this stuff, because that's where they need to go, because their business is drying up fast.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're not going to be having oil for too much longer.
Yeah.
That's going to piss off a lot of oil companies out there.
Yep.
Well, they'll just have to fucking deal with it.
They'll have to obviously be heavily investing into electric vehicles, you know, solar panels, wind power, all this stuff.
And hopefully they'll do it at their own free will.
Yep.
Because if they don't, then we're going to have to make them do it at the point of a gun.
Yeah.
And, it's your feelings versus the survival of the human race.
Yeah, this isn't something that can be politicized. This is for the sake of humanity.
Yeah.
So in addition to that, depending on how fast emissions are cut, between 0.4 and 2.7 million square miles of land may have to be converted to growing bioenergy crops. Up to 3.86 million square miles of forests added by 2050. And still that won't be enough. Every pound of CO2 emitted in the last 100 years will continue to trap heat in the atmosphere for hundreds of years to come. By 2045 or 2050, there will still be too much CO2 in the atmosphere. More forests or some form of direct capture that takes CO2 out of the atmosphere will be essential to stabilize global temperatures at 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's also a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good thing is we have lots of land that isn't used.
Yeah.
Especially here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
U.S., probably most countries that are big, like Brazil and China, Russia, Canada.
We have to give up a national park or two, to do this. I'm okay with that. Yeah. But,
use a lot of that space for solar panels, wind power. Mm. I think there's people working on doing wind power in the oceans and such.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of wind there and there's not much else going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, we have to do a lot of Yeah, the challenge is to stay below 2 degrees Celsius, which requires fossil fuel infrastructure to be phased out, non-fossil fuel energy sources phased in, and large-scale removal of carbon from the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. So, like, to put the addendum to all this, like, we always do when all of these, we get these stories from the IPCC, is remember, these doomsday scenarios only happen if nobody does anything.
Yeah.
Right now, as we speak, most of the technology that we're talking about, most of the resources that we're talking about already exist. Yeah. We already have this. It's just a matter of getting it so that it can be cheaply and widely used.
Yeah. That's pretty much all on the governments.
Yeah.
Because they can easily buy that stuff. Like, we could easily give up, you know, $50 to $100 billion off of our military budget just for this stuff.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen in this administration.
No.
No.
Well, we've got a couple administrations worth to go for there anyway. So, but on top of that, there are thousands of people all over the world working tirelessly to come up with new technologies to deal with this issue.
Yeah.
We've talked before about the, you know, the various things they come up with to deal with the issue of plastics in the ocean. That enzyme that eats plastic. Coming up with ways to lessen our consumption of meat, you know, lab-grown meat and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I do this all the time is because when we talk about these stories, it's really easy to sort of want to, you know, crawl into a bomb shelter and just, you know, wait for the abyss. But, again, all of this only happens if we do nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, we need it not to be the case where the rich people are just building their bunkers.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just saying, you know, I got mine, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think this year we hit the 30-year mark from when the big climate change thing was announced in Congress. And we didn't really do that much.
Nope.
It's only been in the last, like, 5-10 years.
Yeah. All right. Now in happier news, Taylor Swift, the former country now pop star, who is like super duper popular all over the world, she has usually kept her views on politics very low key.
Yeah.
So much so that for a while, you know, there was like she had like a following of white supremacists who viewed her as like the perfect Aryan woman. And because she didn't really talk about politics, she just didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
That means everybody projected their thoughts on
pretty much so much so that
people
everybody,
were good at that.
Yeah, people could project their own political views onto her.
She could
her.
Find lots of memes of people just taking pictures of her and like writing, you know, awful shit on it.
Yeah.
This is probably what she thinks.
Until this week. When she came out speaking about the Tennessee midterms. About who she's, you know, supporting to elect, Democrats, obviously, and came out very publicly against racism, homophobia, xenophobia, etc. And two things happened. First, it drove a massive spike of voter registration. Tens of millions.
I don't think it's that much.
The millions.
I think about 160,000 people they've had register across the country in the last 48 hours or 48 hours as of her announcement. I think I got an email about 400,000.
Yeah.
But especially in her hometown, Nashville, they're saying something like they got about like 2,800 registrations in September. They got to about 3,500 by the time she announced this. Like just almost doubling their rate.
That was the first effect. The other effect is that all the white supremacists had a coronary.
Yep.
Because it certainly turned out that, no, their Aryan princes couldn't give a shit.
Yep.
And, you know, people on frickin' Pole and the Daily Storm are like, oh my god, we must save her! You know, she's been cucked by the Jew media, all that bullshit.
And she's basically backing Phil Bredesen for Senate and Jim Cooper for the House of Representatives.
Both are Democrats.
Yep. And saying that Marsha Blackburn, who's running for Senate, is a Republican, very much says she cannot support her. Voting record in Congress appalls and terrifies me. She voted against equal pay for women. She voted against the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, which attempts to protect women from domestic violence, stalking, and date rape. She believes businesses have a right to refuse service to gay couples. She also believes they should not have the right to marry. These are not my Tennessee values. And just urge people to vote for October 9th. And I think it says here, vote.org said they got about 169,000 new people registered to vote in 48 hours. During all of August, they got 56,669. So about tripled.
All it took was Tay-Tay.
Why these people speaking up at all is important.
I've gone on vote.org twice to make sure that, you know, my voter registration is still there. Does you remember what I said earlier?
Dirty politics.
There's people that think she shouldn't have said anything.
Well, those people,
because she's pushing her opinion on others, and it's like, no, she's using her platform for her views.
Some of those people vastly overestimate their own importance in the grand scheme of things.
It's like she gets to talk about her views the same as you do.
If you didn't want to know her views, stop pestering her about them.
Because she
might tell you.
Well, in other news, so you guys may remember the Fyre Festival. It was that giant shit show that was supposed to be like a luxury sort of music festival.
For like rich Instagram people.
Turned out to be a massive scam.
They ended up there. There was like porta potties and everyone was given like cheese sandwiches and like a basic lettuce salad and a plastic container. People were just sort of straight abandoned there for a while. I mean, it could have been the, I mean, let's face it, that could have been the fucking best reality show ever created. But
play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Well, guess what? The organizer of that particular event, Billy McFarland, has been tried, and he has been sentenced to 6 years in prison.
His two counts of wire fraud for his role in defrauding Fyre Festival investors and ticket vendors of $26 million. He's also pled guilty to another charge of bank fraud for a sham ticket scheme, which he sold bogus tickets to fashion, music, and sporting events, which is a separate thing.
Oh, he's a great character, then.
And
upstanding person.
He's also pleaded guilty to making false statements to federal law enforcement as well, so all good. So, I don't think it's here, but essentially, like, he did not hire people to start setting this up until about a couple weeks before the event started.
That's not going to work.
Basically, probably pissing all those people off. You want to set up a festival in how long?
It's like, fuck that guy. And I'm sure wherever he ends up, somebody will take care of that. No, he's probably going to end up with a pretty cushy prison sentence anyway. White collar crime.
He's probably going to end up in Club Fed or something like that.
But it was the rich that he fucked over.
That's also true.
That never ends well.
All right. Well, next up. Starting on the 1st of January of next year, New York City will be offering a gender-neutral option for birth certificates.
Yeah. The category is called X. Yes, this is the fifth state to do so, California, Oregon, Washington State, and New Jersey. And D.C. also has gender-neutral licenses, driver licenses.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, if you're a parent and you don't want to pigeonhole your child, I guess that's okay.
Yeah.
You know. Yes.
All right. Let's see. All right. Next up after that. Oh, God. This is one of my favorite favorite stories from this week. All right. So there's this woman whose son is a Navy veteran. And after the Me Too movement started going, there were all these people on the right who started complaining about, you know, it's too risky for men to go on dates now.
Like, it's a scary time for young men.
Yeah. I'm like, oh. I'm like, well, what do you think young men are doing all the time? Do you think just straight up rape is like a fucking rite of passage for young men or something?
Mm. You know, yeah, I get the impression it's a sort of thing where to them it's like, oh, this happened, get over it.
Well, this one person, this one woman whose son was a veteran of the Navy, she put up a post on Facebook it was Twitter. Okay. She was on Twitter and she put it up there, and it was a picture of her son in his sailor uniform. And she said, you know, this is my boy. He's a special boy.
Yeah, this is my son, all caps on my.
Mm-hmm.
He graduated number one in boot camp. He was awarded the USO award. He was number one in A school. He is a gentleman who respects women. He won't go on solo dates due to the current climate of false sexual accusations by radical feminists with an axe to grind.
Yeah.
I vote hashtag him too.
Yeah, okay, so two things. First of all, I'm sure he's going on dates, but 6-1, it's not with women.
Very possible.
He's actually spoke since this.
Yeah.
Basically saying, yeah, he put out his own tweets.
Yeah, and he said, he was basically like, mom, WTF.
I said, that was my mom. Sometimes the people we love do things that hurt us without realizing it.
Yeah.
Let's turn us around. I respect and hashtag believe women.
Yeah.
I never have and never will support hashtag him too.
Yeah.
I'm a proud Navy vet, cat dad, and ally. Also, Twitter, your meme game is on point.
Yeah, and so basically what happened is she inadvertently ended up getting, she tried to game the internet, and instead the internet gamed her, because now him too has turned into a joke meme.
Yeah, and basically a bunch of people just posted pictures of their dog saying, yeah, this is my son.
Yeah.
That's some of the sort of stuff.
This is my son, he's a good
boy. They have some good
boy
ones here too. Somebody posted a picture of, who's the Never Gonna Give You Up guy?
Oh, Rick Astley.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, this is my son. He was number one on the charts. He won't go on solo dates even though he never gave up, let you down, run around,
desert you,
make you cry, say goodbye, right, tell a lie, nor hurt you. Hashtag him too.
Yeah. Or the one where it's just like an old, like, Orthodox icon of Jesus. Like, this is my son. He died for your sins.
Yeah, there's another one here of woman taking a picture of penguins, like, this is my son. He graduates second to last in flying camp. Successfully swallowed salmon today. Respect. They deserve women. He won't go on solo dates due to the current climate of false sexual accusations, and also because he's emotionally stunted. Hashtag him too. And he's also taking pictures with his brother, sort of, and his mom, sort of saying, I still love her. She's my mom. What she said was pretty inflammatory, but I want to make sure it doesn't come back harsh on her. She deleted her Twitter account, so she's done with that, I guess. He also said, I was dumbfounded when I saw it, but at the end of the day, we all have crazy parents. Most people don't do that on the internet and get it trending around the world, but yeah.
I think we here in America, there's at least one of these type of people in your family.
Oh, yeah. One of the reasons why I don't look at my Facebook feed.
Yeah. Why my parents don't even know I have a Facebook page to begin with. But, yeah.
So if you want some fun, just look up hashtag him too on, that's T-O-O, on Twitter, and there's probably plenty of fun stuff there.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, yeah, that was special. next up, so this is just a hilarious show, story, out of Hawaii. People just all over started suddenly getting all of these calls from this hospital in Hawaii. You know, they pick it up, and you know, there'd be no one on the other line on the other side, and you know, it's just all over and over, and people trying to find it. You know, like, who is sending out? Is there a glitch in the software? Is somebody just butt dialing all these people? But it came so frequently that, you know, it was just like, what is doing this? And then they found out somebody, there was a phone in that hospital in Hawaii, and there was a gecko that was sitting on it.
Yeah, it's like a touchscreen interface.
Yeah, on the touchscreen, and that was the one that kept sending out the calls.
Yeah, and this was an animal hospital, I think.
Yeah. I think it's a regular one. This particularly involved Dr. Claire Simone, who is a mammal doctor, like seals and stuff. And I think she had been to the hospital recently to help them with the seal. And so they kind of just redialed her like 15 times. She said, has a tweet here, this is all in caps, there is a gecko sitting on the touchscreen of the phone making calls with his tiny gecko feet.
Yeah.
This gecko has called me 15 times and everyone in our recent call list. Actual photo of telemarketer. And it just includes Geico in there. Cause it was,
how long was this gecko hanging out on there?
Probably for at least a couple hours. Somebody here said geckos are very... I mean, it says here geckos are very common in Hawaii and they're always popping up in surprising places.
Yep.
Wow. I've never seen one on... See one dial a phone before. This guy must have found his way inside as we opened the door.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can find lizards here all over the place, so.
Yeah.
Definitely possible.
Too much, but. Yeah. Yeah. I love, like, she's, like, freaking out, trying to figure out what's going on, you know. And then she gets to the hospital, and, like, her colleagues are just sitting there, chill. It's like, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm sure Geico got lots of tweets about this.
A lot of twits too.
Yeah. But yeah.
Maybe one reason not to have a touch screen phone.
Yeah. Or at least, you know,
lock it.
Turn it off. Lock it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Hospitals might not be the best place to have a turning off a phone.
Yeah.
Might need it accessible at all times.
Yeah, yeah. It's possible.
There was nobody in the room at the time though, so.
Yeah. All right, well, next up, we got a Florida story, folks.
Florida woman.
The state that just keeps on giving.
We need a jingle for that.
We do. I'm doing it between, like, you know, beach steel guitar or, like, two strings on a banjo. I'm not sure which one. But basically, a Florida woman... caused a flight delay at an airport because she had her emotional support animal, which was a squirrel.
Yep.
That doesn't sound okay.
No, it's against the rules. The woman informed Frontier Airlines she was taking an emotional support animal on the flight from Florida to Cleveland, I think it was, Orlando to Cleveland. When she made her reservation, however, she did not say the animal was a squirrel. The airline said they called the Orlando police after they asked the woman to leave the plane with the animal, and she refused.
Oh, and she made a big stink about it, too.
Yeah, she refused to leave, and so it eventually got to the point where they asked everybody to plane but her, which made them probably all really happy. So I think this caused the flight to be delayed by about 2 hours.
Isn't that incredibly dangerous? Aren't they really unruly?
Yes. Squirrels? Squirrels? Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Have you ever gotten one stuck in your chimney before?
No.
Somebody
We should have told her we got plenty of squirrels here.
They are mean little bastards when they're cornered.
Maybe she drugged it. But yeah, when she refused to deplane, Orlando police were called and everyone was deplaned so police could deal with the passenger. Police eventually escorted the passenger off the aircraft and returned her to the main terminal. Yeah, so this was shortly after multiple airlines tightened their restrictions on emotional support animals. But yeah. Yeah, Delta Airlines also banned pit bull type dogs.
Yeah.
After several workers were bitten this year. Which is probably more commentary on them than the dog.
Yeah. Just want to point out, miniature ponies, totally fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so next up, and just, it's like a, it's a sitcom waiting to happen. Two prisoners escape jail via trash cans.
Yeah, so they are kitchen workers. So they would have access to that part of the facility. And they have video of it. But yeah, essentially, these two guys, Justin Stumler and Jeremy Hunt, managed to get out by sneaking into the trash cans, and then one of their buddies wheeled it out into the loading bay, I assume, for a trash truck to come in and get it. Yeah, you can see the two men changing out of their orange prison jumpsuits and running out into the street. The problem is somebody saw them doing this on the way out, who called the cops, and who immediately in the jail did a head count in the kitchens, discovered that two of their guys were missing. They lasted 2 days out on the run. They arrested Stumler on Monday morning when they learned he was planning to meet a family member at a McDonald's. And the other guy was captured after leading the police on a brief car chase and got into an accident.
Well, I'll give him an A for effort and an F for planning.
Yeah. Oh, crap, it worked. We got out. What do we do now? I'm going to go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And oh, well. Yeah, basically said, one of the big rules when inmates escape is to check the trash cans. Like, just check any bins and storage areas where people could hide. And they did not do that.
All right. Oh, boy. All right, next up. So over in San Francisco, there's kind of an issue with...
the homeless people.
Yeah, the public defecation, basically.
Now, part of the pee is from what I've heard.
Yeah, part of this has to do with the fact that as San Francisco gets more and more gentrified, it's making it more and more difficult to let, you know, the homeless or itinerants to use public facilities like restrooms or whatever, or to like sleep on park benches, stuff like that. Well, San Francisco now has an app called SnapCrap, which allows residents of San Francisco to send pictures of human feces to the Public Works Department.
Yep.
And you thought your job sucked.
Yep.
Yep, but they let the let the problem get out of hand to such a degree that now there's an app for that.
But of course this would be from San Francisco.
Yeah.
It would have to be.
The guy that made it is Sean Miller. Moved from Vermont to San Francisco. Basically, pretty much everyone who lives here is pretty well accustomed to seeing this stuff when you're walking down the street in every neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It's very frustrating. You should be able to pull out your phone, take a photo, and send it to the city to have it cleaned up. And that's when the idea was born. It's free, launched this week for iOS. I assume not for Android yet. Yep, allows people to take photographs of feces on the sidewalk and the nearby streets to send an alert to the Public Works Department, use a cell phone GPS to track the specific location, and creates a ticket so that users can keep tabs on their complaints. Yeah, so premiered messages that can be sent alongside this photo range from succinct to humorous.
In other news, San Francisco Public Works Department now hiring.
Yep.
And one of the notes they have here is, help, I can't hold my breath any longer. Those spells that, like, breathe. It's been downloaded nearly 1,000 times in less than a week following its launch.
Yeah.
And the city receives roughly 1,300 requests each month for human and animal waste cleanup.
Yeah.
That's going to go up.
That's going
to
go up.
They need some robots to do it.
Yeah.
They have that in Maniac.
Yeah, just...
I mean, you can laugh about it, but it's actually a pretty good idea.
Yeah, it is. All right, next up.
Streamlines a process that most people probably don't know they could do.
Yeah. All right, next up. So when I was a kid, Sears was like the go-to department store. You could basically go there, you get appliances, clothes, you know, stuff like
everything.
Pretty much everything. It was like the standard bearer of department stores. It was pretty much an American institution.
They had those catalogs that came out every year, which had all the stuff for
thick
Christmas.
Toy catalog. Yeah. Those were like the freaking. Yeah, those that was an institution. It was a tradition. And now Sears is pretty much on involuntary life support at this point. It's very close to filing for bankruptcy. It's reached a deal where it's going to try and stay open until Christmas. But after that, it's pretty much dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically earlier this week, they had contacted their banks, their debtors, and said, hey, we're probably going to end up filing for bankruptcy here in the next couple days.
Yep.
They have a $134 million debt payment due Monday that it previously said it may not be able to cover. And, let's see. Yeah, the deal they made a deal with lenders that allows Sears to keep open some of its roughly 900 stores for at least a little bit longer. The goal will be to stay open until at least Christmas, hope of finding a buyer while Sears is in bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so some of the stores are going to shut down about 150 of them at first, which will impact about 90,000 people.
Yeah. In the meantime, if you have a Sears store near you, go there, because you will find some ridiculous discounts.
Oh, yes.
Online, too, as well. So, yeah, Sears.com.
Go there and just loot it for all it's worth. It's a steal at this point.
Yeah.
Also,
if you have like Craftsman tools that are getting a little janky and your warranty is still good, now's probably your last chance to actually go and get those replaced.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Keep that in mind.
All right. Next up. Here we got a good science story, a good medical story, too. The FDA has approved an HPV vaccine for men and women aged 27 to 45.
Yeah, so as context, they already previously approved this for people aged 9 to 26.
Yeah.
So it's extending it to the vast majority of the people that have HPV.
Yeah. Remember, this became like a culture war issue. It's like if you gave this to kids, it would encourage promiscuity bullshit like that.
Yeah, but you can also get HPV through non-sex stuff.
Yeah, not like, that they give a shit.
Yeah, like, I think if you get, like, warts on your hands, like, that's HPV.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's has nothing to do with sex at all.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you fuck something up really bad, I don't know, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, they say it's so common that nearly all men and women will get at least one type of HPV at some point in their lives.
Yep.
And that about 80 million Americans are infected with some form of it, and another 14 million are newly infected each year. So it's really common, but they finally have a good vaccine for this.
Good. Thank goodness. Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah, see, it protects against 9 types of HPV that are responsible for the majority of related diseases. Type 6, 11, 16, 18, 31, 33, 45, 52, and 58.
Yeah.
Which also run those through the lottery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pick.
If you win, you can afford the vaccine.
Yeah.
So many different types of things that can grow on your junk.
And kill you eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of junk,
Google Plus. Nobody fucking uses it. You know, unless, you know, except for that brief period of time when, you know, they hooked it up to YouTube and basically
required all YouTubers to use it. Sign up for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we won't have to worry about that for much longer because after that massive security breach that happened back in March, it's shutting down.
Yeah. I want to actually comment a little bit on this story because it's actually been misreported a lot.
Okay.
Everybody is saying that there was a massive breach. There actually wasn't. There was a flaw that could have led to a breach, but there was no evidence that anything ever happened. Google had fixed it and just not bothered mentioning it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like so, Google Plus, nobody knows what's going on there.
Yeah. So it's basically, this was basically Google was getting ready to shutter Google Plus anyway, and this was kind of like an excuse to do that.
Yeah. Later.
Yeah.
Because they kept it running way longer than its Best Buy date anyway because Google.
Yeah. Kept it going way longer than anybody gave a shit.
Yeah.
And now they got the Senate involved.
Yeah.
They're not exactly happy about this, so they're
trying
to find out more about the security stuff.
Yeah, like the potential affected user base was 500,000.
Yeah.
As opposed to Facebook, which was pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
At least with this, they are making some changes to their API to limit developers' access to data on Android devices and Gmail.
Yeah.
It seems like at least that will be... With.
Sounds downright sane.
Yeah.
I mean, they were doing that anyway. It's just now they have to announce that.
Yeah.
Because,
yay.
It sounds so sane, I'm actually kind of worried.
If you want something crazy, we have our next story.
Oh, yeah. So Google's Pixel 3 phones that are coming out. They are going to have a feature that's going to actually screen questionable calls with transcriptions. So,
yeah, and it's not like just screening them, it's actually answering them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's using that duplex AI that they showed off this year and freaked everybody out with.
Is it customizable?
I don't know.
The example they have here, it says to the caller, "Hi, the person you're calling is using a screening service from Google, and we'll get a copy of this conversation. Go ahead and say your name and why you're calling."
No, I want to try to sell telemarketers butt plugs.
Yeah.
It seems like you can, when you get a call, you can tap a screen call button.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That essentially will start this process.
Yep. Yeah, and the transcription is actually live, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's legit really neat.
Yeah.
Which so would happen on everything, just... Do that to know your friends.
Yeah. So how are they going to screw this up?
I don't know.
They'll find a way.
Pixel phones, they'll probably figure
by
out
not letting you customize it.
Yeah. Well, this is V1.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right.
Pretty soon, you'll be able to customize it and use, I don't know, John Legend's voice to answer your phone calls if you want to.
Yeah.
Because that's a thing that exists already.
Yeah.
Yeah, this launched this week with the Pixel 3 and will be available to the entire Pixel family next month.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it'll filter out to the other Android phones at some point.
Yeah, eventually when the other manufacturers get around to updating Android.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Yeah, did you see the whole Kanye thing with him and Trump?
Oh, God, yeah. Don't mind me.
So in all the video that was being taken, somebody behind him actually caught him pulling out his phone and going to enter his passcode, which is all zeros.
Well, someone would still have to actually get that phone, so...
Yeah.
But now that they know what it is...
It's like, oh yeah,
there are one last step.
These people that have actual important things that could... probably financial information, pictures, all that sort of stuff. Hmm. Yeah, they should be a little bit more security focused than that. It's all zeros, but it also says a lot about Kanye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Kanye is one of my least favorite artists.
He's off the meds, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, he is definitely off his meds right now.
He was on SNL recently.
Mm-hmm.
Like the week after that, they had on the weekend updates, they had Phil. Crap, what's his name? Phil Davidson?
Mm-hmm.
The guy who is well known for having mental issues.
Yeah.
Sort of have him talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about, like, oh, was it going to be him or Michael Che talking about this? Like, we know which side is running the train right now.
Mm-hmm.
As far as his black side or his crazy side.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, basically said, you know, get on the meds. There's no, you shouldn't be worried about that.
Yeah.
They're there for a reason to help you out.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, next up in more technology news, Samsung is revealing the Galaxy A9, which is going to have a grand total of 4 lenses.
Hmm.
Yeah, 4 lenses on the back.
Yeah.
Each one serves a different purpose.
Yep.
Let's see. The main one is a 24 megapixel resolution rear camera. That's just for your main pictures. There's a telephoto lens with 2x optical zoom for detailed close-ups and long shots.
Mm-hmm.
There's an ultra-wide lens with scene optimization and artificial intelligence-powered scene recognition. And there's a depth lens aimed at letting users manage a photo's depth of field and focus.
Mm. Yeah. That's... Now, it's weird that they would do this on the A9, which is kind of their mid-range phone. So, yeah.
It seems like that's kind of their test bed for what they're going to do with the other models.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the picture, the array on the back just looks weird. But
yeah.
Yes. Okay.
We've got 4 opportunities to capture all of your important information.
Yeah. You could do some crazy stuff by firing all those off at once.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
All right.
But will it let me reverse telemarket sex toys?
I'm afraid not.
Damn. No, when they deliver the technology that lets you troll telemarketers, that's when I go all in.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, you know, we got friends who are programmers.
That's true.
Be the hero you want to be. Anyway, moving on from there. Boston Dynamics. World famous roboticist coming up with all kinds of neat mechanical movable dicky hoos and whatnot.
Futuristic miner fuel.
Yeah. They also make military robots, I should think.
They're in bed with DARPA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
They're in a competition with the environment for which is gonna ruin the world first.
Pretty much. Yeah. And guess what? They've now got a robot that can do parkour. So the human race is officially extinct.
So, yeah, they can go upstairs. They can get up when they fall down. They can open doors. Now they can do parkour. Yeah, we're fucked.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to think that the Terminator series wasn't ambitious enough.
Yeah.
Because those robots weren't very spry.
Yeah, well, keep in mind that we still don't have Skynet just yet. So
Yeah,
but they're pretty effective in Terminator. They didn't need to do a lot of trauma because they just needed
stopping
everything.
Power.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They just healed.
Human versus robot parkour, that could be pretty interesting, though.
Mm-hmm. We'll probably show it on
until
Spike.
The robot catches up to the human.
Does it yell out parkour after every move?
Yeah.
God,
parkour!
Parkour! Parkour!
All right, well.
Probably the best thing the French have ever come up with.
I'm just picturing a fighting game AI that doesn't really do much fighting, but it tech rolls everything.
It seems like a dive kick style game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Just all trolling characters.
Yep. Mm. All right, well, now we come to the movie entertainment portion of the show. And first of all, Netflix has officially purchased a studio out of New Mexico that they're going to be using for current and future show production.
Yep. This is the ABQ Studios in Albuquerque. It's their first purchase of a studio complex. Yeah, so see, their upcoming dramas, Chambers and Messiah, are already being shot in New Mexico. Yep. They'll be produced in this new facility. And their third show, Daybreak, will also be produced there.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about a company that has just had a meteoric rise in just incredibly shocking ways.
Yeah, they used to just send you DVDs in the mail.
Yeah. I think you can still get those.
Yeah, sure. I think they still do that.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it's more money.
Yeah, it's a separate plan.
Hmm. It's basically, it's to like what Hanafuda cards are to Nintendo.
Hmm. They're still around, but nobody really buys them.
Yeah. You know, somebody sitting in a Netflix office gets one of these requests. They want me to what? Where?
I don't even know if we have any red envelopes left.
Yeah, you go to the Netflix page, and there's a big thing that says DVD.
Yeah.
Let's see, $5 for the starter pack, starter tier, which is one disc. You get two discs a month. See, $8 for one disc and unlimited, and $12 for two discs and unlimited.
That's pricing ain't that bad actually.
Oh, no, that's for standard definition DVD. If you want Blu-ray, it's $6 for the first tier, $10, and then $15.
Yeah, okay, that's a bit more expensive, but not unreasonable.
No,
but
I
also
Redbox is still a thing. Yeah. Believe it or not. So
there's not enough. If there's not enough streaming for you, here's a bunch more that you have to watch physically.
Yeah, well, there's some stuff that isn't available on streaming but is physical, so there's that thing.
Yeah,
so
but also
everything.
That part of Netflix is infamous for, oh yeah, I got that disc like 3 weeks ago, I still haven't watched it.
True.
I spent $20 on this one DVD when I could have just bought it for 10.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way for them to make money.
Yeah. But, hey, it gets them the cash to make these amazing original series that they put out.
Yeah. So, The Witcher coming out soon, by the way.
Yep. They've finalized the cast. All right. Next up in film news, Ryan Coogler is signed on to write and direct a sequel to Black Panther. Black Panther, of course, was a massive worldwide smash.
Yeah, $1.3 billion.
I liked it. Yeah.
Basically showed that, yes, you can make a great movie with a majority black cast.
Yep.
Yeah,
let's see, they're going to start production late 2019 or early 2020. So still got a while to go.
Yeah.
They can't do anything until the next Avengers movie is out.
Yeah, until we figure out what the hell just happened.
How they're going to undo a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also alongside this news, there's the Black Widow movie I finally confirmed.
Finally.
Good.
Yep.
Good, because they've been sitting on that one for a while.
Yeah.
I think the only other Avenger we're still waiting on is what? It's Hawkman?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, all right.
Which I don't think he's been in any movies since then. He's been in a couple out of the entire thing, but he's never really back anymore.
No.
It's like the second and third Avenger movies, and then somehow he's always busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they definitely could, because, you know, I don't know if any of y'all have checked out the more current Hawkeye series. Mm. They've kind of made it into like a spy thriller.
Yeah.
But yeah, they could totally do it.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense, because that actor was in Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he's already kind of done that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. He worked with Crazy Man.
Yeah, Tom Cruise.
Mm.
Now he doesn't have to. But anyway, next up, well, we finally know what James Gunn decided to do. He decided to go over to the competition. He went over to DC, and he is now in talks to write and possibly direct the Suicide Squad sequel.
That is going to be amazing.
Yeah, and let's be honest. If anybody could do Suicide Squad right, it's James Gunn.
Yep. Yes. Totally up his alley.
It is ready made for him.
Yeah, and hopefully this teaches Marvel the consequences of their actions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bowing to mobs, not a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really going to learn a lesson when everything makes $1 billion.
Yeah.
As soon as this came out, basically Dave Bautista was basically like, oh, I want to be in this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are like trying to figure out what role he would be best in. There's like the giant Harley shark Quinn. Guy.
Yeah, there's lots
of big dudes in there.
Yeah, the only downside is he's going to have to be working with Jared Leto, and Jared Leto is a crazy person. Like, he's a great actor, and you know I love 30 Seconds to Mars, but he is an out and out crazy person.
He is not okay.
No,
he's not okay. We promise. No, that's My Chemical Romance, but anyway.
Yeah. Basically, Marvel and Disney shot themselves in the foot on this one. And
Well, that's good for DC because they need all the help they can get right now.
Mm-hmm. They've only got one out of their entire cinematic universe. They've only got one movie came out that was actually good.
Yeah,
the rest of it is passable to utter dreck.
Now watch James Gunn just completely unfuck their entire operation.
Yeah.
If they're smart, they'll just throw up their hands and get out of the way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just let him do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the guy who took arguably the most obscure of all of the teams in the Marvel Universe and made them into superstars. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and Suicide Squad is already an established property. So he's got a good chunk of the work already done for him. He just...
Yeah.
You know, step aside and let him work his magic.
Yeah.
And the payoff will be great.
Yeah.
And now, finally, our ultimate story for the night. We got a teaser trailer for Disney's live action version of Aladdin.
Yeah.
And it looks pretty good. Bad. Yeah. They got an actual Middle Eastern person to play Aladdin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's directed by Guy Ritchie, which still seems like a weird thing.
Yes, that doesn't...
Because the quote they use here is...
He shouldn't be anywhere near Disney.
Yeah, the quote here is directed by Guy Ritchie, who brings a singular flair for fast-paced, visceral action to the fictitious port city of Agrabah.
Well, for fuck's sake, that's one way of putting it.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, when was Aladdin that? Like, fast-paced, visceral action. It's like, that's not it.
No.
It's part musical, parts funny shit.
Yeah. For the record, Guy Ritchie is the guy who gave us fucking Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Exactly.
The Hard Case, Snatch.
Snatch, yeah.
Revolver. I mean, Rock and Rolla. This guy is...
You're helping make my point.
Yeah. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't do kiddie stuff. He does smoky, hardcore European crime movies.
Yeah, but he is. I think is he still married to Madonna? Yes, I think he is.
Yeah, he divorced her in 2008.
Oh,
he's married to Jackie Ainsley.
Yeah. Okay. You're right.
But this is that is not
not what I was expecting.
That is not.
This is going to be a lot to unpack.
Yeah, this is not the kind of movie he normally does. I mean, the closest is like the Sherlock Holmes movies. And...
But what if it is?
Yeah, I can see this very much being like, hey, this is a movie that my kids love.
Yeah,
so I get a chance to make it for them.
What if he just says, fuck it, I already got their money?
Well, then you might see Bob Iger turn green at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So. Fuck it, he already got his money.
Well, I mean, on the plus side, Jasmine might take her top off. So.
Oh, God. This could turn into a very different movie. I need to see this.
Very easily. This is like, you know, doing, like, they're doing a joke, like, they're doing doing the live-action remake of Snow White, and you find out it's being directed by Joe Esterhaus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, weird thing is, Will Smith is the genie.
Yeah, we knew that for
a while. Yeah, we've known that one, and I'll be honest, I can actually kind of see that one.
Yeah, that one kind of works.
I'm just kind of waiting until we get the trailer that actually shows that off.
Yeah, see, yeah. The problem, though, the one problem is, okay, so I don't know if you guys know, okay, so, you know, obviously because Disney is a huge company, there were, you know, especially during the 90s, there were a bunch of companies that were trying to sort of cash in on Disney's fame by putting out, like, their own mockbuster versions of, like, yeah. various fairy tales and stuff that they would do. Like,
right.
like there was companies like Jetlag and Golden Film. Dingo Pictures is probably the most infamous because theirs are so meme-worthy. But there was this one other company called Bevanfield that was out of the UK, who were known for just the really drab and kind of dreary overall look of their films.
Right.
And they did an Aladdin version too. And in their one, the genie was basically like a, he was like a combination of MC Hammer and Shazam.
Oh,
in design, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you this crap. Because it bears showing.
But weren't some of those knockoff companies actually pretty good?
Some of them weren't half bad. I wouldn't say pretty good, but some of them did do some stuff that was watchable.
Yeah, some of them, you know, well, I mean, like I said, the thing about, you know, Dingo Pictures is that their stuff was so unbelievably garbage that it was so bad it was good territory.
Yeah, I'm not talking about them, and besides, I'm not even a believer in so bad it's good anyway.
But yeah, well, you're wrong.
I think it just goes into bad and then being worse.
So, yeah. Let's see if
well, that's why I approved of the Symphony of the Night retranslation. So there's that.
Yeah. Okay.
So. But yeah.
There he is. He looks like that the whole movie.
Hmm.
Also, in case you're wondering, they set that version of Aladdin, like half of it, in China. Oh, yeah, but yeah, like I said, it's generally not unusual. A lot of people, when they do adaptations of Aladdin, they'll do a good chunk of it taking place in the, I guess it's like the western part of China.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that part of the world, of course, obviously they're connected together. So obviously one will go into the other.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Dingo's version of Aladdin is particularly awful because so one of my favorite YouTubers is Phaelus, who does like a bunch of reviews of like – he does like reviews for like horror movies and Ninja Turtle stuff. He has like a whole series based around bootleg toys. But he's also started doing like a whole series of reviews of mock ripoff animation movies. And he's done the one for Dingo Pictures Aladdin, and oh god, it is so awful. Because not only is like the animation obviously like 3-frame garbage, but the dub is, because Dingo Pictures is originally based out of Germany.
Oh, God.
But the dubbing, depending on what the film is, you'll get one of two dubs. The first is the English dub, which is provided by most of the original voice actors.
Hmm.
Which means that you got at least the one lady who can speak the language fluently, and the one dude who can speak it semi-fluently. And because of, like, the weird ticks between English and German, you'll get, like, their weird use of, like, archaic words and phrases. Like, they'll say the word rubbish a lot, or, you know, they'll say, like, you know, a person they capture an enemy is like, you're safe now, he won't molest you again so quickly. You know, something like that. But then there's the other kind of dub, which is the one that the Aladdin one gets. And it's literally a old Dutch man and a young, and I'm guessing his grandson, just blandly reading off of a script.
Joy.
Clearly not understanding the words that are actually coming out of their mouths. occasionally reading the parts of the script that they're not supposed to read, like stage direction. Like there's that one point where you hear him saying "end scene," or sometimes they'll come in so late on their cue that there's like 2 or 3 minutes of like complete silence. It also doesn't happen that because of the weird, like, there was like this weird error in the, like, weird glitch in the tech when they were doing the transfer, that not only does it look like it was taped off of someone's VCR, because it probably was, but also there's this horrible, what sounds like the screams of the damned that you hear constantly throughout the entire movie. It's actually the elephant sound effect that they're supposed to play in the middle of the movie when there's like a train of elephants that show up.
Mm-hmm.
But you basically hear it like just under the main soundtrack through the whole movie.
Great.
And then there's the one where they did the Pocahontas version. And the transfer is literally so bad that at one point you can tell someone literally just like hit the button and then just left it there for a few hours, because at one point a bug crawls across the screen.
Whoops.
Yeah.
But
so if you ever get a chance to check that out, that stuff is, oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Also, they also put out, like, they had this weird business deal where they came up with this idea. They doubled up with this company called, if I can remember, they were the company that put out Dynasty Warriors 2 back when it originally came out over here in the U.S. I'm trying to remember, they were the ones who, I'm trying to remember who it was.
Because, Koei?
No, not Koei. It was someone else. I'm trying to remember. Anyway, the point was, is because they had this connection with this company, Bingo came up with this idea of deciding to put out their movies on PlayStation and as like a game. And the way they justified the game part is that they would have like these bullshit like coloring book and activity parts that would be like extras on a DVD. Like slide puzzles and all that crap.
Yeah.
You know, that really stupid crap. God, I'm just, okay. Midas Entertainment, that's the people I'm thinking of. They were like a budget developer.
Mm.
But whatever. All right, so I do believe we got a show.
I guess so. Yeah.
All right, well, I'd like to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, or just want to share your views with us, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little bit of recorded shenanigans on places like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, archive.org, RSS, pretty much anywhere where unbelievably great and amazing, godlike podcasts like ours can be downloaded and enjoyed with your ear holes. With that, I have been your host, Brandon Perkins, and for Peter Malfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Pelogi, good night, sleep tight, 3 weeks and 4 days, folks.